You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, Kindreds, what's up out there? Listen, boy, it has been a day, a week, an hour, a minute. It's been all kind of stuff coming in off the planet. The country is really going through it. Everything from technology changes to important messages coming in, you know, from all over the world. What's going on? Everybody is trying to be not so focused on the unimportant matters like who's zooming who and the color of somebody's skin and their social status rather than, you know, the citizens hearing like our government and whoever's running things, y'all got some explaining to do. Please tell everybody what's going on. So today, before we get to our prestigious guest, or illustrious guest, whichever you want to call it, both of them sound very, very good. We are going to announce our sponsor. Yay! Hey, sponsor! Senior real estate and probate specialist Kevin Pike of Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. He is an expert at all of these things. He will take care of you. I promise, promise, promise he will. Again, Kevin Pike, senior real estate and probate specialist, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Now let's get to our guest. Today, I have the wonderful pleasure, you know, I like to pump up our vets. I'm a veteran myself, proud to say it. We have an esteemed Army veteran and a member of a special organization called the ASA. Now I'm going to let, it means Army Security Agency. I'm going to let Norm Silverman, who will tell you more about this prestigious group. But I will tell you that ASA was formed from 1945 to 1977 upon volunteering and going through basic military training. Mr. Silverman landed in Berlin, and what that experience was to become the most rock-busting historical event and experience of his entire life. And the story that we are about to hear, people out there, is a story that has not been allowed to be told for 60 years, and they were just given the okay that they could talk about this beautiful and trying experience. So we will bring on now our guest, Army veteran and prestigious member of ASA, Mr. Norman Silverman. Hey, Uncle Norm. I like to call him Uncle Norm. Hey, Uncle Norm.
Good to see you, Osiris.
How are you doing?
Pretty good for a guy my age, I'll tell you.
Oh, we love it. I love it. I hope I should be so fortunate to live that long. So first of all, welcome. We're going to start off by asking you, what is the ASA? How did it become the USASA and eventually the INSCOM?
It's an interesting story. ASA is Army Security Agency. After World War II and the Iron Curtain started to fall down around the world, a National Security Agency needed to capture a lot of information behind the Allies. And they picked the Army to come up with a unit. And the Army physically trained your military capabilities. The NSA set the standards for your intelligence operations, capturing information. And it actually existed. They changed the name or did away with the name in the mid-1970s because then the NSA was no longer an independent gatherer. It was became part of the national intelligence departments. And as of the ASA actually and their facilities, we quit, or they quit, and we ended in 1990 when the final World War II documents were signed with the Russians, and East and West Germany became one country. And they've been all over the world. The history is that we break down into anything that was transmitted electrically or over a wire. We didn't have satellites in those days, maybe a little bit to the end. And we had what they call ELINT, SIGINT, and COMINT. We were able to take code, we were able to take language and intercept. Those were from radio transmissions, and then from things like telephone or other methods of speech that would be common. And we gathered all this information. We did not work for the Army. The Army gave us a billeting if we needed it, food, a check once a month, not much. And our immediate supervisors were agents of the National Security Agency. And they would give us some of our direction. Most of it, we knew what to do and look for. And we were positioned all over the world, not just in combat. As far as combat goes, we had guys training South Koreans a year before the UN showed up there. In Vietnam, we were training. They didn't even call us ASA. They didn't want us to be known there. They called it R&R, Radio Resources. And we were training the Vietnamese, the South Vietnamese, a year before the Army was there. We took the first fatality in that war. One of our guys did the same job that I did, but he was up training. I wasn't in Vietnam. He was up training the Montagnards, and they got ambushed on a thing, Tom Davis. We were in Asmara, Ethiopia during the revolution. And just as listening posts around the world, we could have been sent to work on the islands and the Aleutians, ADAC. We were in a lot of places in West Germany. We were in our own country. And a lot of our code breaking was being done by teams of women agents in Vinhall, Virginia. And in the mid 70s, we were able to get them to come into the fields with us, and especially in Berlin. Berlin was not active combat, but it could have happened at any time. The Berlin people are amazingly, amazingly brave people. And their history is misused. Berlin, up until 1934, was probably the most popular cultural city in the world.
Really?
I'm sorry?
Really? I said, really? Why? What made it popular?
The motion picture industry they had developed there. Writers like Thomas Mann and Fritz Lang. And most of these people were being taken on by the Nazis and left. It was a cultural run out of Germany. In the mid-30s, a lot of them came here to the U.S. And what we found out interesting when I got to Berlin, which was in 1963, January 1963, mm-hmm. The first night I walked down the street there was an old building there and just sitting there empty, and it was a synagogue, and it had never been desecrated. The Berliners, I found out, number one, could not stand for the Nazis, as most of the German people did not, as President Trump known the other day when the Prime Minister of Germany said, yes, we're very happy of Normandy. It released us from the horrors that we were having. And Berlin, the army was going to put on a Passover service and invite whatever Jewish people had come back to Berlin. There were 4,000 families there, and many of them had been there the entire time, protected by the Berliners and the honor of the Prussian people that lived mm-hmm. there. We became a very important, very to us, intrinsic part of the city. Our free time, we did not have to put a uniform on to go into the city. When I got to Berlin, I hung up my Class A's, and the day I left, I took them off. when I wasn't in my fatigues in the woods on my machines, I was a civilian. I didn't have to have an army haircut. We were part of the city. And 80% of the time, we were Berliners. So we understood their fear. We understood their anxiousness. We knew when the balloons were going up, the Russians were moving around and things were happening. The poor people in Berlin, they just went about trying to get back to a 1933 Berlin, building their culture back. Fantastic culture. And it's back. It's unbelievable today. I just came back from a trip there.
How many of you are there left? How many of the original people from the group that you were in? And then I'd love for you to tell the audience exactly what you guys did, why it was such a special group.
Okay, I can tell you mostly. Some of it may still be
classified.
The general composition, yeah. There's from Berlin alone, I have email connections with about 100 people. I'm part of the older team. As I said, we were there for 40 years, and some of the younger people in their 70s and are still around. But what did we did? What I did personally, I was a radio interceptor. I would look for specific sounds at certain ranges on the radio, like them, and you could pick up the strength of a signal, the code that it was sending, and identify it. And when you found it, it usually was somebody on the eastern countries sending out a signal to one of their spies. They're ready to receive information. Once we picked up one of those sounds, then we all started to look for the sound of the spy going to be sending that high speed, which is be a 30-second to 45-second transmission. And we had to pick up his call signal and then turn the machine on, the magnetic tape machine, and capture the high speed. Then we would slow it down and copy it onto paper and get it off to the decoders. That's one thing we had to do. We would keep one of our units in a place called Rudow. They were tracking the missile movements in the east. Anybody in Russia or East Germany would turn on a truck that was carrying missiles, our guys would pick it up, identify the location, where they were moving to. We picked up the traffic of everything, where their troops were, where their people were calling home. The linguists would get a lot of information. Mm-hmm. And, one funny story, I don't know how true it was, but they picked up a signal of one of the guys in the field, a Russian guy in the field, talking to his girlfriend. And another call was coming in on him, and it was his wife. And they just switched. They just flipped the switch on it. I'm sure he's listening. But that may be a story.
I can see where that might have happened. Talk a little bit about now. I don't think everyone out there knows that in order to be a part of this group, your IQ had to be a certain level.
Yes.
So these people were super intelligent. So please explain to sure. us what
we
that
did, is. Yeah, we did not know that. We went to basic training or we're getting enlisted or volunteering or getting drafted. They give you a test and they give you and based on the score of your test, they can adapt to and say, hey, have you heard of this unit? Well, the test, you get the first or second day you're in basic training. You're disoriented. You don't know where you are. But the tests have nothing to do with your level of education. Hmm. The tests are geared to for you to have a concepts. They give you a series of information. And how are your concepts? And everyone in our unit, with our conceptual growth, automatically can belong to the intelligence units. RIQ among the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people that take this this tape, all are in the top 3 to 5% in the world. And we don't know it. We know now that we're talking about it. We all have lived similar lives. Everything that sounds interesting, we go in and involve ourselves in it. Some of us went to college and got PhDs, and one wound up retiring as a vice president of a Swiss bank. I never finished college. I went to some fine schools, Fordham University, Columbia University, Cornell University, Pepperdine University. Wow,
Cornell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I never followed. I'd find something else that was interesting and go on. Meanwhile, by the time I would get a job and people would promote me. And wow. By the time I was 38 years old, I was taken into a company that was doing about $500 million worth a year. And I had to redesign their whole structure. And then they sent me to California for 2 years. And when I retired at 50, I didn't go back. I stayed in California working for them. I was running a division. It was close to $3 billion, and my staff was good. The company still exists, and they're up to $65 billion a year.
Around that was retail? You were in retail for a while, right?
That was retail. Retail, yeah. My whole life, different variations. Yeah. But that was the keynote of it. Also with sports, I tried every sport. If I was good enough to play it, I was on the team. If I wasn't good enough to play it, I knew enough to coach it. Mm-hmm. And I mean everything from a kid on up. I was an equestrian. I played industrial hockey.
Wow.
A little bit of everything. And I do 10 years, 15 years, and go on to something else.
But now, how did the West Berlin Archives come into being?
Okay, yeah. We started to get declassified between 10 and 15 years ago, slightly. The guy that picked it up was one of our guys, unfortunately recently passed away, who was a linguist. And he figured, you know, he had a lot of photos, and he tried to get the guys all together on a forum. And started Yahoo, and they disappeared, so he went Google. And then when he knew he was terminal, he asked if somebody could take everything over. So we had a conversation and said, yep. And he bequeathed us over 2,000 photos that he had gotten from all the guys, all the emails confirming or deconfirming the stories that people were telling. And we started having a monthly Zoom meeting, and we decided we're going to build a website. We created a corporation, a not-for-profit corporation, no stockholders. We have a few directors, and we have Class A members that had to be either with us, worked with us, or members of their family. And we have and they have the right to vote when we put up things for vote. And then we have Class B members that people just want to associate with us, and they get everything but benefits if we have any benefits to do. And it's grown to this thing. We're starting to open up. The sun is coming in. A couple of weeks ago, I think I told you the story. It was a few months ago. One of the guys in the town here owns a very nice restaurant. He was in the Middle East twice, and he knew I had been in the service, asked me if I could be a speaker to their Kiwanis group. And I went down, and I had a nice conversation and gave him an introduction and gave a talk for about a half an hour. And we'll go to sit down. I get a standing ovation. It took me by shock. And
I can see why. You're great speaker.
In the meantime, we're getting together with guys from Vietnam that were working on trying to get us a memorial at the cemetery in Arlington. Oh. Yeah, we're the only member of the military that does not have a memorial, as he says, a home to come to.
Vietnam veterans?
All of the ASA veterans.
All the ASA veterans, got you. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of them are not there. And that's other problems we have. But so I've been involved now with a few thousand of the ASA guys that are around the world, and we're trying to bring this thing out. We just had a few people on the East Coast. I think CBS on some of their stations has a thing called Veterans Speak.
And yes.
They've been on that show now, two or three of those. And I've had a few more talks and starting to create a PowerPoint that we can send out to colleges and universities because mm-hmm. they have the stories wrong.
So what do you think, what is it wrong that we have and how can we correct it? I mean, we've got you, thank goodness, right now, but how can we correct it?
The history. They don't have the true history on a lot of the stuff. Not all of our stuff is declassified. You want me to tell you what I did? Physically, everybody pretty knows that. Stuff that stays classified is not what we did, or how well we did it, though when we're doing it, how well is classified. But it's the techniques we use to gather. Other than our machines, how does our operations operate? And that's still, a lot of that is still classified. One of the things, for instance, that we did, which we get no credit for, and the poor guy that did it still around. We just met each other in Berlin again. Mr. Hathaway was our agent at the time. Came in and wasn't my trick. It was the trick after me, and said, "Hey, we need you to do something. There's a blast coming on. A fast. It's obvious code and it's high speed, but it doesn't sound like typical code, and it's low frequency and it's weak, and it comes up around 9 o'clock Berlin time at night." If you can find something strange like that, see if you can get it, get a directional on it, and see if you can even copy it. And this friend of mine, Bill Gasser, he was on the machine that night, and he found it and copied it. And he called his boss over, a guy that wrote our great book Spooks in the Woods, who's his trick chief, and said, "I got this thing, but it's strange." And they slowed it down, and Mike has an ear for music. And he says, "That's not diddy dots. That's musical sounds. And an A and a C and an E flat." And he took the code down and broke their call ups with a machine that we have, a Hellscribe. And he sent it, the NSA sent it to the Army and the Air Corps. We didn't know. We just did what he asked. And he came in a few days later. And he thanked Gasser, and Gasser said, "You know, Mr. Hathaway, whatever it is, it's moving, but I only have an azimuth. I can only get one direction on it, and it could mm-hmm. be anywhere from Canada to South America." And Hathaway broke up one of our rules, need to know. We did not need to know. But he said, "Yes, I expect it to be moving. Those are new Fox-class Russian diesel submarines."
Wow.
We knew when they left their port up in the North Atlantic, and we thought they were going to the Barents Sea, and the Navy lost track of them because we didn't have satellites. So, you know, communication. Mm-hmm. We picked a signal bouncing off the ozone. And they were on a suicide attack to our carrier fleet that was blockading Cuba. And they did not know that Kennedy and Khrushchev had come to an agreement that they would take their atomic missiles out of Cuba, they'd turn the vessels around bringing missiles, and we would take our missiles out of, I think it was Turkey at the time. And we were just going to leave they were on attack. I have this thing.
Hold it close to the screen so we can try to see it.
You still can't.
We can see a little bit.
It's in Russian. But it is, it's an attack picture that we had picked up, and it shows where the submarines were, where Cuba was, and they were within days of releasing those atomic tip torpedoes. One of the submarines I got on a clearance that I get these regular clearance releases from the National Security Agency. Mm-hmm. Had damaged itself a little bit off Guantanamo Bay, but did not break open any of the torpedoes. And the thing ended its facts that had the torpedo broken open, We couldn't get in the water between Florida and Cuba to this day because of the atomic energy that was there. But
well, let me ask you something.
60 years, we didn't know it.
You didn't know.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, let me ask it this way. Have any of those things that were used back then poured over into our present day war techniques, how we're communicating, or is it all technology of those things being used?
Yeah, communications is all different. Capturing information, the using of AI is an art now in intelligence. And in fact, it gets to the point when I finish a Zoom meeting with my guys, I get a recap of the meeting, not just a picture that I've recorded, but I get a recap done by AI, and it's better than anything I could ever put down. It's scary.
AI is amazing. Yeah.
And girls. But a lot of things have changed. There's other things that have changed, but not in, it's now who's taking over our intelligence and giving away our intelligence and not understanding the oath that we swore, and all of us. And by the way, everybody in the ASA is a volunteer. Nobody was drafted to be in the ASA.
Oh, wow.
I had volunteered for the draft and wound up in the ASA, and it was wonderful. And all of ASA was volunteers.
Well, I read your story. It said that one reason that they chose you was that you had some training in the ROTC.
Yes.
And they wanted some people with some military training. So what was that like going from, you were a kid, you're in your story, I love your biography. You said you went from, you started at Fort Dix and then you went somewhere else. The next thing you knew, you were in Frankfurt, Germany, and then you ended up in Berlin, and that started the most emotional extravaganza experience of life. Talk a little bit about that if you can.
Okay, well, I can tell everybody. I can hardly remember breakfast and any morning, but I remember every minute that I was in Berlin. But before that, when I was in Fordham University, they didn't have a fraternity, but I was in ROTC. And they had a group there called the Pershing Rifles, which was a drill team, world class. But what we would do, we were getting money from the government on our days off from school to go up to Fort Smith near the West Point and work on training and developing training. This was in 1956 for what was going to become the Green Berets.
Oh, wow.
I was trained. Be a partial Green Beret. That's why I say when I fall, I don't tend to break any bones. I learn how to roll and
duck and roll.
Tuck
and roll. Duck and roll.
My muscle memory is a lot better than my regular memory. Yeah.
I bet it would be. A lot of people, as you know, we're both veterans, comrades in arm, but a lot of us retained. We didn't get deprogrammed. None of us got deprogrammed. We didn't get declassified. We were let out the barn with every memory, every feeling that we have. And it's taken a lot of years to overcome a lot of those experiences, especially because I don't think people understand out there, if it were not for veterans, and even we have to still fight for freedom. We are fighting for freedom. And it's not easy when you're out somewhere in a strange country. Your parents have been and family have entrusted you to the hands of the U.S. government or wherever you're going from. And you get in there and you find out, what the hell is this? What's going on here? I know when I was in, and no one can tell me what happened, we had a guy come in. I remember it like it was yesterday. He had a steel plate in the top of his head. And he showed us some pictures of these gray beings. I don't think they call them aliens, but he had us look at them. And he said, that the military didn't want anyone to know about it, but he came in and taught us all a class. So I'm never surprised. Yeah. And a lot of people don't know that Eisenhower, I think one of the other presidents, they left a budget to extraterrestrial research, people. Yes. These things are not, they're not some weird thing. These things have been going on for years. And I think that the education of the American public is just now coming. We're kind of waking up now and smelling the roses, you know. Well, so what do you have to say about those kind of things? Because a lot of people saw a lot of things and they were told to shut up and say they didn't see them.
Well, we had top secret. We had signed to, and we had top secret crypto and a monthly changing code. If we needed something in the White House, we intelligence, we'd get it there in 10 minutes. And we said we would not talk about it. And if we did, we were subjected to somewhere between $15,000 and $30,000 fine and between 15 and 30 years in federal prison. But it didn't matter. None of, you know, we just wouldn't do it. And there was one guy that was a Brit and one of our guys that fell asleep on the train and woke up in West Germany. But considering the fact that 40,000 people, 40,000 of us over the 40 years went through being ASA people at some security. You can, guys are very proud of what they've been able to do. Yeah, we found people with the children that their parents that wouldn't tell them. The guy was a docent at the United States Army Museum in Washington, the museum for the U.S. Army. And one of our guys was there and asked the docent, do you have anything here on the Army Security Agency? And he said, when you come in the lobby, we have all the logos of all the U.S. Army people since the Revolution. Hmm. And then he looks at him and says, you know, we don't. My father, I think, was in ASA in Germany or in Berlin. But anytime I asked him, he wouldn't tell me anything. And that's the life we live. But now we're letting the sun come up and the curtain come up. The guys from Vietnam, veteran in the VA, are getting a terrible. They want to know if they're entitled to help for exposure to Agent Orange. Mm-hmm.
And explain to everyone what Agent Orange is. They're not military people necessarily.
Okay, around Vietnam during the war, the planes were dropping a pesticide to clear the jungle so our guys could see their way through. It happened to have a resilience of poison that would stick in your body and come back later in your life. And our guys are constantly asked to, well, where in Vietnam were you working? And the Army has no records because nobody knew where we were. We were moving with the units. So our guys don't get any benefits for the possibility of the diseases they're getting from that disease. That and I just found out in Berlin that the Teufelberg, the big mountain that we had on top of the city that came on in 1963, where a huge gathering, that was all made by World War II rebel houses, ammunition and everything, made a 310-foot high mountain that they could ski down. Well, it turns out it's all poison. It's from homes and from bombs. They had to drill a hole 300 feet down to the ground to get a ground for the electricity for our things. I just got an NSA thing released about in the last month that the Teufelberg ground is terrible. And our guys, that we had a big team of guys up there from 1963 until 1990.
Now, you just came back from Berlin.
I'm sorry?
You just came back from Berlin. So yeah. Why did you go? Tell everyone why you went to Berlin and what did you accomplish and how Berlin has been able to pay homage to this old thing by turning that city into a bomber thing you were saying, telling me?
Well, you have to understand the Berlin is a cultural city, and it's back to being one of the great cultural cities in the world.
I like Berlin. I've been to Berlin.
Yeah, you can go in August and join the Naked Marathon race. No, I'm just kidding. But they came to help during the lift in 48. We needed an airport that had been damaged. The women would come out in their dresses. German soldiers that had come home, that were engineers, mechanics. We had that airport open in 90 days. And one of my buddies was helping a woman that lived in the house next to him and said, this was a few years later, 10 years after the war. Does it bother you now that the Americans are still hanging around Berlin? And she takes him into the house and into the basement. And she had an entire wall of what they call REM, ready to eat meals.
Merchandise.
From the lift. From 1948, and said, "How could we be this annoyed by having our angels from the sky that came to us?" Mm-hmm. At Berlin, I would find you, and say, "Hey, you American, we didn't look too much like GIs because we didn't have to have GI haircuts. You could grow a mustache. We wore clothes, and most of us could talk enough jet, but." You're an American. Can I buy you a drink? And then we would hear stories from the people that had come over the wall. And we saw the people who were getting shot going over the wall. And that stays with you. The Berliners had that in their head all the time. We knew when the wall was going up. When I got the information about it, they had already started, the guys that were working on the swing shift from 4 to midnight knew it was coming up. When they drove home, they could pass by. They're putting an 80-mile wire city around the city.
Wow. Okay.
And the pro-Berliners, they didn't know what was going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. So,
but they went around their business.
Yes.
Great culture they had. We saw Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong came. Every major celebrity, they had their own great Philharmonic Orchestra. They had a great ballet. By 1963, they were back to being a great cultural city.
Mm-hmm.
They were Berliners again, and it stays with you. You feel what they felt. They had the fear. You could feel their fear.
Their fear.
They lived with it. We knew when the balloons were going up. They didn't know when the balloons were going up.
Beautiful city. Yeah. Beautiful city. That in Munich, they were so clean when I went there. And
yeah,
I wanted to live in Europe. And I was just so Europe-bound. And I came back to the United States.
Yeah.
And you guys can say what you want, but it's about 50 years behind over here. It's very embarrassing when you go to other countries and you see the sophistication of other countries and have to come over here. And all we can find to think about is what's wearing who's zooming who, what color their skin are, and if they drive or what kind of car. And it's so, we're going to get a good wake-up call, and I'm happy. I am so happy that the United States is getting our butts beat and that we are being required to grow up like the rest of the world. Grow up.
Do I still have one more minute?
Of course you have two. You have about 10 more minutes.
Go ahead. Well, when we were in Munich, we were invited to talk to junior high school, early grade high school, like 10th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade students. My wife's family, as I said, I may not have said, were invited to become Bavarians in 1605. And of course, they had to run from the country during the Holocaust. And the students all... We told them about what the lives were there and and they were open for question and answer. And every one of the schools that our people went to, we had a recap when we came back to, and we had the same questions and same answers. And the one question that repeated from all of these kids, other than, was this house there, what happened? How do we avoid what had happened? How do we avoid it again? These kids are so smart.
What did they say?
Every one of us answered the same way. Vote.
Vote.
Yeah. And the kids understood exactly. You have to stand up for what's right. You don't give respect to people that don't own respect, but you vote. And we had a meeting, there were 80 people. We all said the same thing. That's what every kid from the rich neighborhoods, from the poor neighborhoods, not too many very poor neighborhoods in Munich. The Germans seem to manage their financing very well. They have a good middle class.
Beautiful city.
But that took me by surprise. These kids are so bright. And the history, where the Nazis used to burn the books and make books, they insist on being having the books and being forced, not forced to, but being ability to get the books, any books they want to read. Mm-hmm. Every school, the children are required to go to a museum for the Holocaust and take mm-hmm. part and see mm-hmm. what's going on. It's so free, it's so light. The only thing that bothers me is the traffic, which is people my age on bicycles.
So, wow. Yeah. But that's good though. I mean, you know, but they're into all of those things. Those things are not fads over there. It's like a lifestyle. It's not a fad lifestyle. Or trend. It's a lifestyle. Let me ask you one more thing, because we've got about 10, maybe about 8 or 9 minutes left. When you spoke to the Daughters of Legion, was it the Daughters of American Legion? How was that, and what makes them what is the difference between the Daughters of the Legion and Sons of the Legion, or moms or uncles of the Legion? Why is it the Daughters of the Legion, and what was the experience you had in speaking to them? Because it's quite a big group, I've told.
Well, they have a long, strong field to history, and there were a lot of veterans that were there. Mm-hmm. In fact, we met in guys that had heard about Mickey, the crazy cat. I met the granddaughter of a woman, a young girl, of a grandfather was ASA in West Germany. And she was so happy to get some information. She's going to put him in touch with me. But the people were just absorbing this and looking and saying, wow, this is, you know, who knew this? Who knows this? That and the other thing I discovered, they have a posting that you can find of the IQs around the world as posted. And the average is considered 100, an IQ of 100. If you have below an IQ of 80, they probably can just about write your name. But the United States, our average is between 96 and 98. It's below average.
It's below.
And what's scary is the states that it occurs in. They show you where they are and where it's lower. And then you look at the IQs in places like Denmark and Norway and Germany. And
the kids speak 4 and 5 languages, and they're 4 and 5 years old. I mean, it's embarrassing. Yeah. I really don't want to get to it. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed sometimes to call myself an American, because I grew up in a country that had everything. Yes. Everything. We had access to everything. And how in the world did everybody else grow up? I know we've taken care of a lot of people. I will put that in there. But our focus is so off. It's off.
Yeah.
Our focus on what we're focused on and what we should be focused on is off.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even important. Who cares what somebody wore to the... It's so stupid. Everybody's like, so what? My son is over 6'5" and he wore something. So why isn't everybody's?
Since we're good guys understanding concepts, we've come up with a reason for it. We've allowed the inmates take over the institution.
Wow.
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
Well, you can see their lack of understanding concepts. Most of them. And, aside from even a lot of them are very well educated, but they don't understand how to apply that education to concepts.
True.
And the most of them just don't have concept. I'm willing to bet that I don't want to get into politics. No, I could give you
a number. Get your blood pressure worked all up again.
Well, I have under control. Thank you.
So we want to be able to keep you savored and calm as long as we can. I need to have you around for your wisdom and your incredible presence.
Yeah.
But listen, we've got about 3 more minutes, and I promised the station owner, because everything ran kind of late today, And I wanted you to tell everybody where we can find out more about the West Berlin Archives, how we can find out more about ASA in NASA, and the INSCOM.
It's amazing that you asked. First of all, the website is an ongoing, and almost about the history of Berlin, but it has some information about ASA, a lot. Mm-hmm. And that is www.westberlinarchives, with an S at the end, .org. Mm-hmm. And in there, they can find me under Historic Narratives. We're starting to post everybody's bio on there.
And I saw it.
For us, that's a history to give our children, our progeny, some pride of what their parents and grandparents had done, and to pass it on to history. The other thing is, we have a few good books out. This one, I think, is one of the best.
Spooks in the Woods.
Spooks in the Woods. And the easiest get it is from me. You can get my information on the website, or just Google it. It is a history of the wall. It starts in 1960 through 1963. The guy that wrote it has over 200 photos in it. He took probably 80% of them himself. He was a trick chief on the team that found the submarines. Unfortunately, he's in a hospice situation now. He's a terrific guy, and he's
come. We wish him well. At
that point, yeah. And
we wish him well. We got to go, people. I want to say one more shout out to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. We'll take care of all of your real estate needs, I promise.
I wrote it down, and I'm sending it off to my guys.
Okay, he wrote it down. He's sending it off. And then I want to also give a shout out again to our guest, the fabulous U.S. Army ASA, knows all about what happened. My uncle, Norman Sue's my play uncle. You guys, I adopted him when I met him. He's so sweet. Want to also listen up. We love you. I love that you come every week and support us religiously and diligently and vigilantly. And we want to thank our sponsor, again, our LA Talk Radio show, Sam Hassan, for letting us shine every week. And don't forget to smile. It works wonders. And I loke you. Loke is like and love together. So I like you and I love you at the same time for what you do, who you are, and how you make yourselves always present. Don't forget about me, Osiris_Moonir_the painter. I'm a veteran, proud to be one. I've got lots of stories, both us and Uncle Norm. We got a lot of stories to tell. We've been and done a lot of things. I know we look like regular people, but we are not common people, are we, Uncle Norm? No, we are not.
So we gotta go. I have another 100 more stories about Berlin, but it's okay.
Okay, we'll talk more. You're going to be around. We're going to tell some more stories. We got to go because there's another show coming up.
Thank you. It's been real.
And thank you all. Thank you to our guest again, ASA, USASA member, U.S. Army veteran. I'm proud to know you.
Thank you.
You are my uncle. I love you.
Thank you.
Uncle Norman
Silverman.
Bye. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. I need your numbers. Goodbye. WestBerlinArchives.com. Bye-bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.